What if our deepest moral judgments, those gut feelings about right and wrong, aren't the product of careful reasoning or religious teaching, but rather the result of an innate moral faculty that evolved over millions of years? This provocative thesis forms the backbone of Mark Hauser's groundbreaking work, Moral Minds, which has been hailed by Noam Chomsky as a contribution of great importance and influence. Drawing on evolutionary psychology, neuroscience, and linguistics, Hauser challenges conventional wisdom about morality's origins. The book has become required reading in university ethics courses worldwide and has influenced thinkers from Steven Pinker to Peter Singer. Perhaps most fascinating is how Hauser's work bridges the seemingly unbridgeable gap between scientific materialism and our intuitive sense that morality transcends mere cultural convention, revealing that our ethical intuitions may be as universal and innate as our capacity for language. When faced with moral dilemmas, most of us make judgments instantly, without conscious deliberation. Consider this scenario. A runaway trolley is about to kill 5 people, but you can flip a switch to divert it to another track where it will kill only 1 person. Most people judge this action permissible. Now consider pushing a large person off a footbridge to stop the trolley and save the 5. Though the outcome is identical, 1 dies, 5 live, most people judge this impermissible. Similar patterns emerge in other scenarios, like choosing between saving a family member versus multiple strangers, or deciding whether to lie to protect someone's feelings versus maintaining strict honesty. Why the difference? When asked to explain, people often become morally dumbfounded, struggling to articulate the principles behind their intuitions. They might offer post hoc rationalizations or simply state, "It just feels wrong," despite the logical outcomes being equivalent. This pattern mirrors what happens in language. We effortlessly determine whether sentences are grammatical without consciously accessing the rules governing our judgments. For instance, we know instantly that "the cat the mat on sat" is wrong, but few can explain the exact syntactic principles violated. Drawing on Noam Chomsky's linguistic revolution, Hauser proposes that humans possess a universal moral grammar, an unconscious system of principles that generates rapid judgments about right and wrong. Just as we're born with the capacity to acquire any human language based on exposure to a particular linguistic environment, we're equipped with a moral faculty that develops through exposure to our cultural context. This explains why certain moral intuitions, like prohibitions against incest or harm to innocence, appear consistently across cultures while specific manifestations vary. This moral faculty operates like an instinct, an evolved capacity that unconsciously evaluates the causes and consequences of actions. It processes factors like intention, causation, and harm automatically, weighing them according to implicit rules. It doesn't make moral judgments inevitable, but constrains our options and colors our perceptions. For example, we automatically distinguish between intended harm and accidental harm, or between action and omission, even when outcomes are identical. The principles underlying this faculty remain largely inaccessible to conscious awareness, which is why we often can't explain our strongest moral convictions. The dominant view that conscious moral reasoning drives our judgments is largely an illusion. When philosophers like Kant proposed elaborate systems of moral reasoning, they were likely reverse engineering principles that were already operating unconsciously in their minds. Research shows that people often make moral decisions first and construct justifications afterward. Our moral judgments are mediated by a hidden grammar that evaluates actions according to principles we can't articulate, shifting morality from a philosophical domain to a scientific one. This explains why moral debates often reach impasses. Participants are arguing from unconscious principles they can't fully articulate or examine. Our sense of fairness emerges early in development and appears across all human societies, suggesting it's part of our evolved psychology. John Rawls's landmark work, A Theory of Justice, proposed that fairness is the foundation of justice, with principles discoverable through a thought experiment. Imagine designing a society from behind a veil of ignorance, not knowing what position you'd occupy. Rawls argued that rational beings would choose two principles: equal basic liberties for all, and arrangements where inequalities benefit the least advantaged. Like language, fairness operates through universal principles with parameters set by cultural context. Just as languages vary in word order while following grammatical constraints, fairness judgments operate within boundaries that vary parametrically across cultures. The cooking metaphor illustrates how principles work like recipes. Certain ingredients, parameters, are necessary while others are optional, and once added, they interact with other elements in important ways. Economic games reveal these principles in action. In ultimatum games, where one player proposes how to split money and the other accepts or rejects the offer, people consistently defy pure self-interest. Many proposers offer half their money despite having no obligation to share, while responders reject low offers even when getting something would be better than nothing. These irrational behaviors contradict the model of humans as purely self-interested money maximizers. Cross-cultural studies show that fairness is universal but culturally parameterized. Unlike Western college students who typically offer 40 to 50% in ultimatum games, small-scale societies showed offers ranging from 15 to 50%, with varying rejection rates. Cultural context explains these differences. The Ao and Gnao of Papua New Guinea reject even fair offers because accepting gifts creates unwanted reciprocal obligations. The cooperative Aceh of Paraguay generously offer over 40%, while the individualistic Machi Gwenbut of Peru make the lowest offers, 15%. Our fairness judgments operate through unconscious reference points. Most people intuitively judge actions that abuse power as unfair, such as raising rent after learning a tenant found a good job locally. However, we consider it fair when an employer cuts wages to avoid losses. These judgments emerge from unconscious parameter settings about reference transactions that operate automatically beyond conscious control. Our moral intuitions about violence reveal deep principles in our moral grammar, operating much like the unconscious rules that govern language. The famous trolley dilemmas, first proposed by philosophers Philippa Foot and Judith Thompson, demonstrate how we make sophisticated distinctions between permissible and impermissible harm, even when the numerical outcomes are identical. Most people judge flipping a switch to divert a trolley, killing one to save five, as morally acceptable, but pushing someone off a footbridge to stop the trolley as morally wrong, despite both scenarios saving five lives at the cost of one. Several crucial moral distinctions explain these divergent judgments: redirecting existing threats versus introducing new ones, impersonal versus personal harm, and, perhaps most importantly, intended versus foreseen consequences. The principle of double effect, originally developed by medieval theologians, emerges as particularly significant. Harm that is foreseen but not intended may be permissible, while harm intended as a means to achieve good is generally deemed impermissible. These nuanced distinctions reveal that our moral judgments operate according to complex principles beyond simple utilitarian calculations of maximizing good outcomes. Extensive research on these moral judgments, conducted across multiple cultures and demographics, found remarkable consistency in how people evaluate different scenarios. Neither gender, age, education level, nor nationality significantly influence permissibility judgments across various moral dilemmas. In controlled studies, most subjects consistently judge that Denise could permissibly flip the switch, killing one to save five, Frank couldn't push the large person, Ned couldn't flip the switch when using one person as a means to save five, and Oscar could flip the switch when the death was a foreseen side effect. Fascinatingly, while subjects made these distinctions reliably, they often struggled to coherently explain their judgments, frequently expressing surprise at their own seemingly inconsistent answers. The Moral Sense Test website, developed by Harvard researchers, collected unprecedented data from over 60,000 subjects across 120 countries, representing diverse cultural, educational, and religious backgrounds. Their findings strongly confirmed earlier patterns. Approximately 90% judged Denise's switch-flipping as permissible, while only 10% approved of Frank's pushing action. Yet remarkably, 70% of subjects provided insufficient or inconsistent justifications for their judgments, appearing morally dumbfounded regardless of their background, education, or religious beliefs. While our moral judgments reveal underlying universal principles, actual violent behavior varies significantly across cultures and contexts. Like language, our moral faculty appears to consist of universal principles with flexible parameters, allowing for cultural variation. Though some universal patterns exist, such as young men being responsible for the vast majority of homicides worldwide, significant cultural differences in violent behavior demand deeper explanation. The American South provides a fascinating case study of a culture of honor that originated among herding peoples who needed to protect valuable, portable resources in regions lacking formal law enforcement. Contemporary research shows Southern men respond more aggressively to insults with measurable increases in anger, cortisol, and testosterone compared to their Northern counterparts. This psychology persists generations after the original conditions disappeared, manifesting in modern attitudes toward gun ownership, self-defense laws, corporal punishment in schools, and support for capital punishment. Similar honor cultures exist worldwide, from Mediterranean societies to Middle Eastern Bedouin communities, suggesting how universal moral capacities can be shaped by specific historical and ecological conditions. Our moral faculty builds upon five foundational principles of action that emerge before infants reach their first birthday. First, self-propelled objects are categorized as animals. Second, objects moving consistently toward targets reveal goal-directed behavior. Third, objects that change direction flexibly in response to environmental constraints demonstrate rationality. Fourth, when one object's action closely follows another's in time, we perceive a social contingency. Fifth, self-propelled, goal-directed, and flexible objects can potentially harm or comfort similar objects. These principles guide infants' expectations about object interactions, as demonstrated through looking time experiments, where babies stare longer at violations of these principles. These early emerging principles form the building blocks of our moral faculty, providing the foundation for distinguishing between permissible and forbidden actions. Our sense of self is crucial to morality, enabling responsibility, guilt, pride, and empathy. Self-awareness begins developing early. 2 months olds learn they can control their environment through actions, and by 18 to 24 months, children recognize themselves in mirrors, coinciding with emerging embarrassment, empathy, and pretend play. Emotions drive moral action, functioning as biasing agents that can either motivate or inhibit behavior. While basic emotions like fear and anger appear universal, moral emotions like contempt, guilt, and shame vary culturally. The development of emotions begins early. Fetuses respond differently to their mother's voice, and newborns display core emotions within weeks of birth, suggesting these are innate capacities that form the foundation for social relationships. Our ability to read minds and infer intentions forms another foundation of moral judgment. Children as young as 4 or 5 make sophisticated moral judgments based on intentions rather than consequences alone. They distinguish between Jane turning up the oven temperature to help her mother versus Jill doing so to burn her sister's cookies, or between Joey deliberately putting his sister's dress in the rain versus Jimmy accidentally leaving it outside. Brain imaging studies reveal that moral judgments engage both emotional processing, supporting Hume's perspective, and deliberative reasoning, supporting Kant's view. When subjects faced moral, personal scenarios like pushing someone off a footbridge, brain areas crucial for emotional processing activated significantly. The anterior cingulate showed increased activity during moral conflicts, revealing the neural signature of moral tension. Patients with ventromedial prefrontal damage consistently choose high-risk, high-reward options despite long-term losses, showing no anticipatory emotional responses that normally guide healthy individuals away from poor choices. These patients aren't intellectually impaired, but emotionally disconnected. They understand rewards and punishments, but can't integrate emotional feedback to guide future decisions. The parent-offspring relationship represents our first social experience and illustrates the tension between self-interest and concern for others that underlies moral decision-making. Even in the womb, offspring and parents engage in an evolutionary conflict. While offspring seek to maximize resources for themselves, parents must balance resources across all potential offspring. This fundamental conflict stems from simple genetic math. Parents share half their genes with each child, but each child shares all genes with itself, creating divergent interests despite their mutual goal of genetic continuity. The fetus employs hormonal tricks to divert blood flow and can trigger gestational diabetes by blocking insulin effects. After birth, infants continue manipulation through neotonous features, large heads, big eyes, and signals like crying that exploit parental sensory biases. Contrary to Voltaire's assertion that we're born without mathematical principles, humans possess two innate quantification systems, one for precise small numbers, up to three, and another for approximate large numbers. 5-month-old infants demonstrate these abilities through looking time experiments, showing surprise at impossible numerical outcomes. This numerical development directly impacts moral development, particularly fairness. Young children with limited number capacity can't compute exact equality in exchanges, making them vulnerable to exploitation. Lying involves evaluating both causal and intentional aspects of actions. While lying is generally forbidden across cultures, exceptions exist for white lies that avoid harming others. Young children develop sophisticated deception skills early, with even 4-year-olds understanding that certain emotions should be concealed in social contexts. While humans evolved to be selfish resource seekers, we also developed psychological mechanisms to enforce fairness and punish cheaters. Unlike formal logic problems, which humans struggle with, we excel at detecting social rule violations. Cosmatize and Tooby argue that we possess specialized cognitive machinery for detecting cheaters in social contracts. When logical problems are framed as social contracts, like if a person drinks beer, they must be over 21, people solve them easily compared to abstract versions with the same logical structure. Envy, though often considered useless or destructive, actually serves crucial evolutionary functions. Unlike jealousy, triggered by relationship threats, envy responds specifically to resource inequities and helps maintain social balance. In egalitarian hunter-gatherer societies, mild envy triggers gossip and mockery to check boastfulness and maintain equity. In economic experiments, subjects reject unfair offers despite personal cost, demonstrating spite that punishes excessive inequality. When faced with trolley problems involving chimpanzees rather than humans, our moral intuitions shift. While we hesitate to sacrifice one human to save five, many find it permissible to push a large chimpanzee off a footbridge to save five other chimps. This inconsistency reveals our species-based moral distinctions, though logical consistency would demand equal treatment across species. Darwin believed animals with social instincts could develop a moral sense if their intellectual powers approached human levels. From an evolutionary perspective, seemingly altruistic behaviors can be explained as the operation of selfish genes, promoting genetic posterity through kin selection and reciprocity. Complex moral design features, like cheater detection systems, likely evolved as adaptations for social exchange among our ancestors. Animals form expectations about objects and events, detecting violations when outcomes don't match predictions. These primitive detectors are called Darwinian nodes of action, DNA. Studies with monkeys reveal they understand several principles. Animal objects can move on their own, while inanimate ones cannot. Directed movement indicates goals. Objects should move rationally. Contingent responses signal social interaction, and self-propelled, goal-directed entities can help or harm others. Some animals demonstrate rudimentary empathy. Chimpanzees yawn contagiously when watching others yawn, mirroring a human empathetic response. More compelling evidence comes from rats who stop pressing food levers when doing so shocks nearby rats, effectively starving themselves to prevent another's pain. Similarly, rats will press levers to lower suspended, distressed companions despite receiving no reward. Rhesus monkeys show even greater self-restraint, some refusing food for up to 12 days when obtaining it would shock a companion. Their restraint increases if they've experienced shock themselves, if the potential victim is familiar, or if it's another monkey rather than a rabbit. While these behaviors suggest empathy, they could also reflect aversion to distress signals or fear of retaliation. The evidence indicates that while various animals possess some moral capacities, experiencing emotions that motivate helping or harming, reconciling conflicts, and following action principles similar to human infants, they differ from humans in their impulsivity and limited self-control. Most critically, while individual species demonstrate subsets of moral capacities, only humans appear to have evolved the complete set. Throughout history, across all world cultures, various versions of the Golden Rule have been articulated, sometimes with positive framing, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, sometimes negative, do not do to others what you would not want done to you, but always expressing the same fundamental principle of reciprocity. Buddhism, Confucianism, Taoism, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all contain versions of this ethical guideline, suggesting a universal human moral intuition that transcends cultural boundaries. This remarkable convergence appears in societies that had no contact with each other, indicating deep evolutionary roots in human psychology. Even young children demonstrate an intuitive understanding of fairness and reciprocity before formal moral instruction. Hamilton's rule creates fundamental asymmetries of interest between parents and offspring based on genetic relatedness. While parents are related to all offspring by 0.5, siblings are related to each other by only 0.5 or less with multiple fathers. These asymmetries generate predictable patterns of conflict, with offspring evolving psychological tricks to manipulate parents, and parents developing mechanisms to distinguish honest from dishonest signals. For example, baby birds exaggerate their begging displays to compete with siblings, while parents must balance resource allocation among multiple offspring. Human families show similar dynamics, with children often competing for parental attention and resources through various strategies, from crying to achievement displays. Animals demonstrate clear concepts of property rights without written rules. Territorial species, like red-winged blackbirds, establish boundaries through calls or scent markers, with a precedence effect giving owners an uncontested advantage. When challenges occur, resource-holding potential, size, and fighting ability determines outcomes. For movable property like food, proximity establishes ownership, as shown in macaque studies where subordinates could keep raisin-filled tubes if physically controlling them, with dominance respecting this possession. Similar patterns appear in wolf packs, where possession of food items is generally respected even by dominant animals. These natural property rights suggest that human concepts of ownership may have deep evolutionary roots. Cooperation in animals reveals intricate social principles that parallel human dramas, showing coalition building, competition, and alliance breakdown. While many animals form coalitions for resources, humans uniquely cooperate extensively with non-kin and maintain stable reciprocity. Hamilton's rule explains kin cooperation, where genetic relatedness makes altruism evolutionarily sensible. The greater puzzle is cooperation between unrelated individuals, which takes two primary forms. Byproduct mutualism, like cooperative hunting where all participants benefit despite costs, and reciprocity, delayed exchange requiring complex psychological mechanisms. Examples include dolphins coordinating to herd fish, primates forming alliances against common threats, and birds giving alarm calls that benefit the entire group. Humans show remarkably greater variation between neighboring groups than any other species. While chimpanzee communities across Africa may differ in tool use or grooming techniques, these traditions lack emotional significance. No chimpanzee would be ostracized for using an arm instead of a stick to fish for termites. In contrast, human group differences carry profound ideological weight, from religious practices to cultural identities. This extends to language dialects, dress codes, food preferences, and social customs. Even minor variations can become powerful markers of group identity and basis for discrimination or solidarity. This unique human characteristic suggests that cultural evolution operates alongside biological evolution in shaping human behavior and social organization. Humans occupy a unique position on Earth as both highly variable and virtual clones. Despite our immense cultural diversity in language, rituals, beliefs, and moral norms, there exist universal properties of mind constraining this variation. Just as our diverse languages arise from universal principles, our moral systems emerge from a universal moral grammar, allowing each child to develop within a narrow range of possible moral systems. This biological perspective on morality contradicts three common misconceptions: that biological views eliminate free will — they don't, they establish ranges of possibility, not fixed outcomes — that moral principles must be directly encoded in DNA — they aren't, we inherit abstract principles lacking specific content — and that only religion prevents moral decay. Studies show atheists and religious people make identical moral judgments across cultures. Religion's simple deontological rules cannot explain our complex moral intuitions, particularly in dilemmas where principles conflict. Children's moral development resembles language acquisition. Experience prunes possibilities rather than building morality from scratch. Many principles driving our judgments remain inaccessible to conscious reflection, which is why parents cannot explicitly teach what they themselves don't consciously know. The conflict between moral intuitions and legal or religious guidelines becomes particularly evident in bioethics cases like Terry Schiavo's. Despite being seemingly unexceptional as a euthanasia case, it generated extraordinary public attention. Between 60-70% of polled Americans supported removing her feeding tube, with opposition primarily from religious conservatives who viewed it as an attack against God. The case highlighted the blurring boundaries between government and religion in America. Most people sided with honoring Terry's wishes to end life support, aligning with philosophical, legal, and medical arguments, but contradicting religious doctrine. Through reason and intuition, many believe that terminating life is permissible when someone suffers without hope of recovery. The science of morality stands at its earliest growth stages, but with exciting discoveries emerging monthly. Like linguistics before it, we can anticipate a renaissance in understanding the moral domain. Moral inquiry will no longer belong exclusively to humanities and social sciences, but become a shared journey with natural sciences. The universal moral grammar with parametric variation offers a way to think about pluralism, requiring us to understand how parameters are fixed by experience, and appreciate that once fixed, we may be as perplexed by another community's moral system as by their language. Recognizing our shared universal moral grammar should provide comfort that perhaps we can understand each other.